Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Load Seaters, and today I am joined by Carl.
Just today, just a random day.
Yep. And Esther.
Hi.
So today we're going to be talking about Illegals Built America, Average Day in Haiti, which is going well, and the war against terror is a war of attrition, which we were just discussing. How do we make this fun? Because that's
yeah, they all sound really depressing.
I believe the Haiti one will be fun. I mean, that is just a comical place.
Okay.
I mean,
unless
bad.
You live
exactly.
There,
yeah. Well, life is not so comical.
Jesus. I don't. So, you know, we'll get into it later. But the Dominican Republic, right next door, the level of hatred they have for the Haitians.
Oh, I bet.
So they're sort of looking at all this, being like, ha 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 ha.
I bet they have an actively militarized border.
Yeah.
not a goddamn one.
Exploding plantain trees, yeah. Just lining across. Yeah. They look innocent, and then you touch it and explodes.
Yeah. The Hunger Games out there.
Exactly.
But anyway, let's get into the news, shall we?
Yeah, why not? So weirdly, Joe Biden decided to take to the airwaves to tell Americans that they were smelly and ungrateful, useless, potentially murderous, and definitely the inferiors of the godly and saintly and perfect immigrants who illegally break into their country by crossing the border, despite, well, I mean, there were active attempts to stop them. There aren't anymore. And I just find this remarkable. I just find this absolutely remarkable. The president of the United States can essentially tell Americans that they're all just bad people and they need to accept their new immigrant overlords.
Surprise me, though. It's the kind of thing that I'd expect from Joe Biden, to like just open his mouth and nothing coherent comes out, but he thinks he's doing a good job.
Well, actually, the problem is that something coherent did come out of his mouth. It kind of slipped out in a moment of weakness and everyone reacted really badly to it. So let's begin with the murder of Laken Riley. Now, Laken Riley, as Wikipedia tells us, was just the average 22-year-old American nursing student at a university in Athens, Georgia. And one day she was killed by someone. And this person has been identified. He's been charged. He hasn't been convicted yet. But Jose Antonio Ibarra, average American
name. Midwestern name,
yeah. Yeah, 26-year-old Venezuelan who had committed a crime by entering the U.S. illegally, was arrested and charged. And he had been arrested previously. He had multiple arrests against his name. He had a bench warrant for failing to appear in court after a shoplifting case. He was arrested for endangering the welfare of a child because he was caught riding a moped with an underage child on the back. I mean, just like many questions are raised by this. No answers are given, obviously, yet. And the thing is, he's literally a part of the Deliveroo economy. He worked for Uber Eats and DoorDash in a local restaurant in New York City. So
there's anyone who deserves a criminal investigation for their employers.
Yeah. And so it looks like he's the murderer. And it was just apparently a crime of opportunity. For some reason, he saw her out jogging and decided he would murder her. It's like, right. Okay. That's pretty terrible. And this came up when Biden gave his State of the Union address, which did you watch at all?
I saw highlights.
Yeah, it was really boring.
It was pretty. Thing is, he always looks like he needs glasses. Like, he squints a lot when he's giving a speech because you can tell he's concentrating so much. He's using all three brain cells that are left. So he's like,
yeah.
And it was quite painful. So I was like, you know, I'll just read the transcript.
What was interesting is the energy levels he displays. So at the beginning of the speech, he's very energetic in telling his opponents that they're the source of all evil and the source of division because they won't agree with him that they are the source of all evil and he's the source of all good. And then he starts getting tired towards the end of the speech. So Trump tweeted on Truth Social out of the drugs are wearing off, and it was mildly amusing, but
probably true,
but obviously true. Yeah, that's the thing. But the point is, like, Biden's State of the Union speech is just, my opponents are irredeemably evil and they won't agree with me that they are the source of all evil in the world, and therefore they are divisive and bad. And it's like, okay, why is anyone listening to this? Like, why does this exist? But about halfway through, Marjorie Taylor Greene started to heckle Joe Biden. She yelled, "What about Laken Riley? Say her name." Biden then held up one of the buttons Green had been handing out bearing Riley's name and said, "Lincoln Riley," so he got the name wrong, "an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal," Green responded, and Biden replied, "By an illegal, that's right."
So he acknowledges it.
He acknowledged it. And he used the word illegal, meaning illegal alien. Then he proceeded to ask, "But how many thousands of people are being killed by legals?"
Why?
Why not just up the numbers?
Illegals may kill X number of people, But many more people are killed by legal people.
Yeah, so why not import more problems?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Where are the good people in America, actually?
And
well, it's the illegals, because they kill fewer people than the legals, you see. The legal people are the problem in America, which is literally his just first response.
Which is probably the legitimate response and the response he meant to give.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so illegals good, even if they murder people, because legals bad, because they murder more people.
Do they, though? Per capita? Or is this one of those meme moments?
Well, the thing is, you probably wouldn't know it, actually. I'm surprised they got the name of this person, because assuming he's just illegal, he's probably unvetted. It's probably not his real name.
Quite possibly. Who knows? We don't know anything about him. We don't know why he was driving around with a child on the back of his bike. We don't know why he's there, and he shouldn't be there. But anyway, is he really the problem when Americans are murderous barbarians who just can't do anything for themselves, and they need these illegal delivery drivers to tangibly improve the quality of their country?
It really makes me sad to say this, but I can actually see the US becoming a completely failed state in the next 5 years. I don't think people realize
parts of it becoming a failed state.
Well, because the thing during Biden's presidency, I believe it's 7 million illegal people have crossed.
No, it's more than that. We'll get to it.
It's a failed state.
Is it even a state at all?
Well, with no borders, you could argue no.
That's the point. And so this off-the-cuff comment from Joe Biden, yes, he was an illegal immigrant, because technically that's what he is, drew immediate progressive backlash from Democrats and immigration advocates. I mean, for example, one Texas Representative Joaquin Castro.
Okay.
Feeling a bit of ethnic solidarity here. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Like, you know.
Is he Cuban?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Jose Antonio Ibarra was defended by Joaquin Castro.
Castro, yeah.
So, okay.
Poetic.
Yeah, really. Okay, that's very interesting.
What's the defense?
There was a lot of good in President Biden's speech tonight, but his rhetoric about immigrants was incendiary and wrong.
Illegal immigrants who murder are bad? They're just as
Joe Biden actually said they were better than the average American.
Right.
You know what pisses people off is the complete disregard for life. Like, imagine if that young lady that was killed was like their daughter or relative. Like, it's just, they have no regard for people being killed.
Family destroyed. Absolutely.
Honestly,
they don't care about it.
But what I find strange is there are no consequences for effectively dereliction of duty.
Yeah.
Is these people's responsibility to protect the border?
Yep. There's nothing I can say to it. You're just completely correct.
Yeah.
There are no consequences to this.
Yeah.
Nothing will happen to Joe Biden's political career. Because, I mean, let's be fair, he's got to be.
Oh, that's the cream of the crop. I mean, what about the rest of his administration that are allowing this?
Yeah, they'll fail upwards, as they always do. And so there was obviously a huge amount of just left-wing posting like this. Killed by an illegal is amongst the most vile statements I've ever heard in mainstream politics. This is really blowing up amongst the racist loser community. So to them, I'd like to say, you're all racist losers. It's like, would you say that to the family?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Of course not, Jesse. But the point is, he is actually kind of right in this. Yeah. Killed by an illegal is actually among the most vile statements you could ever articulate. Because actually, borders are not that difficult to secure.
Yeah.
It just requires will. And so it should be that there is never a need to say killed by an illegal.
The logic against securing your borders, which I can't even believe I have to say this, is so baffling to me. Like, these people live in houses with doors.
Yes, they do.
You're allowed to regulate who comes in and out of your space, but you think a country of 300 plus million people, like, they don't have the right to do that. That's what I find so bizarre. Everywhere around you, there are borders.
Yes. Borders are a good thing, actually.
Well, of course.
Borders are what make things desirable. As the Dominican Republic knows. But the thing is, I think the problem is that kind of presupposes that there's a group of people called the Americans who possess a particular spot of land called the United States. And that's what these people are against. They want everyone to be able to live in the United States, no matter how bad it gets. But anyway, so...
I think it's actually more cynical than that. They want a surplus of Deliveroo drivers so that they can maintain their luxury middle-class lifestyles. I don't think it even goes... I don't think they're sophisticated enough to actually want to destroy the very basis of American society. I think they just want cheap labor.
That's probably true.
And they don't care which lower-class people they condemn by getting it.
that's probably true. But anyway, so Joe Biden was asked about this by MSNBC, and he decided, you know what, I was wrong. I'm going to totally backtrack. Oh. I thought we'd just watch it because this is just wild. Because, I mean, remember, if actually illegals are per capita safer than the average American, more productive, I mean, the average American isn't running the Deliveroo economy, for Christ's sake, then the good people in America aren't the Americans. They're the bad people in America, right? And so you've got...
uplifting.
Sorry?
They need uplifting.
Well, that's
they need re-educating.
That's why the noble immigrants have arrived in America, you see.
But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lake and Riley.
Did he say allegedly?
Undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing. We have to control the border and more orderly flow, but I don't share his view at all.
More orderly flow. I mean, he said it all.
Built the country.
You know, did you see his face when he said I should have said undocumented, not legal? You could see like the cogs in his brain turning.
You could
like
see his handlers had been illegal, like, don't
exactly.
Say
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was like when Keir Starmer was asked what a woman was. He had the same expression. He was like, what did my handlers say again?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't know what that is.
Foreign murderers built the country, though.
I'm not going to treat any of these foreign murderers with disrespect. They built the
control
country.
The flow. So the public, the American public have no choice. No. The flow will happen. We're just going exactly, to control it according to how much we think we need. Yeah. I mean, forgetting about they built the country. What is this obsession with they built the country? Like,
I have no idea.
Like, it's so bizarre. Like, they've never picked up a history book.
Built the country.
Well, yeah, black Americans built the country.
Yeah, I kept getting told 70%
of the population were just, well, yeah.
No, it was actually Antonio Jose.
Yeah. Like this.
Well, yeah, which one is it? Did they build the country or did the black Americans? I don't understand why black Americans are not incensed by this, because technically they say they built the country, but now the illegals that are coming in, how many? 7 in the last 3 years? Plus 7 million?
It's astounding numbers.
Yeah, they built the country. So which version of the country?
Wait, yeah. Which country are we building?
Exactly. And who takes credit for it?
But if we're building one where just the locals get murdered and then support the murderers.
That's a little cherry on top.
Well, that's what he's supporting.
They don't come in for the murder, but the murder is like an extra perk.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're coming to make sure that you get
your Deliveroo and then your neighbor might be stabbed. Who knows?
I mean, it's just mad though, isn't it? Because I mean, like this is just insane. Like, to totally discredit the people of the United States for having any agency or credit for the state of the country that the illegals are trying to get into in the first place. And they're saying, yeah, well, these guys who just arrived built this country. I mean, like, okay, but what country are you even talking about?
Well, it's ahistorical nonsense. This is the kind of thing that I don't think people should get outraged about, because they're just showing their ignorance. It's nothing surprising.
It's not even ignorance. It's malevolent.
But he knows that's wrong. He's not ignorant about that.
Yeah.
He's being evil in this regard.
Are you sure? I don't think he even knows what countries are.
No. He does, because as you can see, there's two narratives, right? One narrative is the kind of common sense narrative that people in America live by every day, which is, well, we're Americans, you know, our ancestors arrived in Mayflower, and then we, you know, manifest destiny to cross the continent, and then we defeated the Nazis in World War II, and we went through the Cold War, and now we're just kind of here, and that's just the normal common sense narrative that makes America established as a normal country that just exists, right? And then you've got the second narrative, in which divine, angelic, rose petal-covered immigrants cross the borders for no particular reason to help the poor, deprived Americans out of their state of indignity. And it's like, why are they doing this? What is the point to all of this? And then when heckled, he goes, oh, yeah, no, it wasn't legal. Because it defaults back to the normal narrative. And, of course, when he's in this sort of hyper-reality above, he's got to grind the cogs and be like, don't say illegal, don't say illegal, don't say illegal. Because he knows this is a BS narrative. This is not true. He knows it's not true. But the point is, why is he saying that this isn't true? And I love this is the difference between me and President Trump. Yeah, because, I mean, Trump went and met the woman's mum. Mm-hmm. You know, Trump's like, really sorry, we're going to fix this. You know, like Trump actually cared about border security. And so he had a rally in Georgia, brought the family, who were obviously devastated, I imagine.
I can imagine, yeah.
Like, just... like, this is the difference. Biden's literally going to say, yeah, I'm not going to disrespect the murderer of your daughter. It's like, I think if we can disrespect anyone, It's got to be that guy, right?
I never thought that I would watch in real time these small elite group of people fundamentally change the character of the US. I don't think people understand when you have these people come in, you fundamentally change what the country looks like. It's like, you know, Britain's immigration figures. It's not just about, you know, 1.2 million people over 2 years. Who's leaving?
Yeah.
So who are they replacing? Are they replacing the same skill sets of the people that are leaving? I highly doubt it. You know, we're complaining about doctors and nurses going to Australia.
Are you suggesting?
I'm just saying.
We are,
you know,
losing.
And we're bringing in Deliveroo drivers. I'm just saying. So look, it's not even about just the people that you're...
All of our Deliveroo drivers are moving out to Australia.
Well, no.
We're replacing them with these.
Well, I'm just saying. But the thing is, but you, like, it's a valid point. Like,
you're totally right.
Like, it's not just... I'm worried, obviously, about the number of people coming in, the scale, what values are they bringing with them. That's the big conversation. But I'm also... No one's thinking on the other end, who's leaving? Because... You also see, oh yeah, the Australians and the Singaporeans and the Canadians are getting all our medics. And I'm like, yeah, medics and those kinds of people are a pretty higher band of employee that have years of education. Mm-hmm. You don't exactly want to replace those with Uber drivers. No one wants to say it.
I don't, but apparently.
No one wants to say it.
Joe Biden does. But anyway, so yeah, just to talk about the numbers very briefly. They're pretty horrific. This is from January, but the United States until 2020 had 10.2 million illegal immigrants. And then another 10 million across during Biden's presidency. And that's only registered encounters, obviously.
Ah, okay.
Because the fact that they're illegal means that there's going to be probably a fairly large number, a known unknown, of people who have not been encountered, of course, aren't being engaged with by the system.
I can imagine drug dealers wouldn't want to be known to the system.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of an invisible... number that we can't really track, because why would you? And people should probably remember that on day one, Joe Biden decided to start undoing all of Trump's border security initiatives through executive fiat. So the border will stop being built, controls were relaxed and all sorts of things. And then the problem exploded. And that's why he's like, well, we probably need to control the flow. But like you say, the flow.
Exactly. Yeah. The what? What if people don't want a flow?
It is strange just how much it matters who's the president of the United States. Because in this country, like, it barely matters.
Matters, yeah, exactly. Both. What did Georgia Galloway say? Both sides of the same, both cheeks of the same ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, yeah.
And even
exactly.
If you change internally, it literally
couldn't
matter.
Well, I think to an extent, it's the same in the US. I mean, it's the civil servants that run things. I mean, even if you get as far as being elected, you cannot change anything. You have this cabal of people that don't face any consequences for poor decisions, and they're the ones responsible for enacting your policy. So nothing ever changes unless you clean out.
I think it's the difference between a parliamentary democracy and an executive presidency, though. I mean, you see like Milei in Argentina and like Bukele in El Salvador. You can't actually get stuff done.
Like, I'm thinking, for example, just on one of those points you mentioned, the executive orders. One of them, if I remember correctly, was long after COVID had stopped being an issue, on the basis of, oh no, we might import COVID, the Americans were still allowed, or at least the border force were permitted, to just send them back to Mexico.
So, yeah.
Because, oh no, they might have COVID, so let's keep them out.
Exactly, even though COVID's not a thing anymore.
But Donald Trump kept that around because, like, well, it's obvious bollocks, but it's good. And
it
then
works.
Joe Biden got rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that was our number one tool.
Well, we need to vaccinate them, you see, Callum.
Yeah, well, they're 10th vaccine. Has anyone else questioned how many vaccine, like, rounds of vaccinations we're on for COVID now?
Nope. We're not going to talk about it on YouTube. So,
that'll be after the show.
We completely agree with whatever it is YouTube says about the vaccines.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, just as a quick thing, it hasn't always been this way, obviously, in America, which... you can probably remember, because, I mean, going back as far as 2009, you get Obama just...
half a million. Oh,
yeah, Obama talking very reasonably about immigration. And you remember that Joe Biden was the vice president at the time. So it's not like this is a normal thing that Americans have always thought about immigration and illegals. I mean, let's just watch Obama for a second.
This is not going to be a free ride. It's not going to be some instant amnesty. What's going to happen is... you are going to pay a significant fine. You are going to learn English. You are going to go to the back of the line so that you don't get ahead of somebody who was in Mexico City applying legally. But after you've done these things over a certain period of time, you can earn your citizenship so that it's not something that is guaranteed or automatic. You've got to earn it. But over time, you give people an opportunity. Now, it only works, though, if you do all the pieces. I think the American people, they appreciate and believe in immigration, but they can't have a situation where you just have 500,000 people pouring over the border without any kind of mechanism to control it. So we got to deal with that at the same time as we deal in a humane fashion with folks who have put down roots here, have become our neighbors, have become our friends. They may have children who are U.S. citizens.
You can't have 500,000 crossing the border in 2 months. Actually, it turns out you can.
Hold my beer. Yeah, that's what you're... I can tell Obama is hating Biden's presidency. Obama, I mean, I remembered when he waited very long, up until the last minute, to even endorse Biden against Trump. Mm. And I was like, why is that the case? And then he started to do a bit of digging, and he didn't respect Biden's opinion on virtually anything.
Yeah. In fact, apparently when Biden decided he was going to run, apparently Obama was like, you don't have to do this, Joe.
Exactly. Yeah, you really don't. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he wasn't amused when DeSantis flew over, or was it bust over, the migrants, illegal migrants to Martha's Vineyard, where I'm told he has a nice, humble abode.
Oh, does he? Yeah. I didn't even know that. I'm told, I should have guessed, though. But yeah, so I just think Americans should remember what their president's opinion of them is. And perhaps if they were to, I don't know, fly to Mexico and then get a coach across the border and cross illegally, Joe Biden might actually gain a positive opinion about them.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
That's grim.
Not even sure.
Well, it's really encouraging to know that the people leading the American people hate them. That's positive news for the day.
I never even thought about the idea that Obama must be sitting at home just being like, my legacy. Like, he probably quite liked, okay, of like most of the country who are right still obviously hate him for what he did. Hmm. But he must have quite liked that even in the left-wing circles,
He's
considered some kind of perfect saint. Hmm. Like, what's the line they use? Like, scandal-free presidency.
The mythology.
Saint Barack,
It's not true, but, you know, he probably liked having that mythology, and now just, weren't you that guy with Joe Biden? It's like, look what he's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty, well, let's go to another clown show. Haiti, everyone's favorite country. Everyone goes on holiday. Everyone. No.
Really? No.
No one ever goes.
No.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's been an average day in Haiti, that country we all think about every day. And as you can see here, the news came out that a gang leader named Barbecue has decided to take over the capital. Because.
This is not called Gaylord.
Criminal
Gaylord. That would be different. Gaylord. I'm pretty sure
you
that would get him killed.
The African warlord.
Oh God, yeah.
Gaylord.
Yeah.
That would get him killed. Like, at least in Haiti.
General Butt Naked.
Yeah, General Butt Naked or General Gaylord Mosquito. Something or other. And like, they've got some great names. Yeah.
There's the best one in Liberia. There was General Mosquito, and then a rival started fighting against.
It's a pretty
General
popular Mosquito. One because there's General Mosquito in Ghana as well. I didn't know that was a popular name because they're such a menace. We don't like that pesky malaria.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But then the guy who was fighting General Mosquito took on the name General Mosquito Spray, which is just
amazing.
Just gets
wonderful
worse.
Places. But here's the news. I mean, as you can see there, he's having a lovely time.
Look, he's really diverse. There's a woman there. There's a woman with a gun.
That might be a boy.
Exactly. Actually. I thought the boobs gave it away, but you never know these days.
But Drutka has got a big old thread here on just why Haiti is so dysfunctional. And I'm not going to go through that because we've done it before. The funniest one for people who haven't seen it before is the way they teach how to use a computer in many Haitian schools is with a blackboard.
Okay.
So they tell you to click on save. And obviously the children don't even know what you mean by click. Never mind save.
That's helpful.
Yeah, so it's kind of a dysfunctional place, to say the least. But back to Mr. Barbecue. Now, my understanding of the story, and I'm sure people know better than me, but my understanding is, in 2021...
Sorry to interrupt. How did he give himself the name Barbecue?
Barbecue. So
he cooks people and eats them.
Oh, that's great. That's as you do.
Okay.
Yeah. So 2021, President of Haiti gets assassinated, and ever since, they've not had a president. But they do have a prime minister. Mm-hmm. Now, the prime minister was off in the United States on a trip. And then was going to fly home and run the country and try and
was
get it back.
Was he crossing the border illegally?
Yeah.
Well,
was he flying or busing?
An actual refugee.
He was flying, but he is now an illegal immigrant because he tried to land back at his homeland. And Mr. Barbecue said, nuh-uh, because he's taken over the airport.
Oh, dear God.
And just refused anyone to land, including the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister's buggered off to Puerto Rico and is like, give me my country back. And Barbecue, opinion of that is no.
Does the country only have one airport?
My understanding, yeah.
Probably
the main
big
one.
Place.
Yeah, it's not. Definitely not.
So the...
they might have a spare one just in case these things happen. You know, if you're going to run a country like this, you have to take precautions. He needs to really, like... Someone needs to, like, get Charles Taylor and be like, listen, you need a masterclass.
get a boat, you'd think, and a gun.
Literally.
But Mr. Barbecue, he's issued a statement because he's now being a bit of a political figure.
We have an official statement from Barbecue, the guerrilla leader.
Yes.
Taken of Haiti. Okay.
So Barbecue has issued a statement saying that if the president the prime minister continues to be the prime minister and the international community backs him instead of stopping and backing who, he's not said. But if they continue to back that prime minister, civil war will happen.
Mm.
And he then said that will lead to genocide. That's a campaign promise. He hasn't said yet.
Yeah.
Like, who are you going to genocide?
They're not two different peoples. You just don't like the president.
Yeah.
Well,
we're going to genocide those guys over there. Like,
he'll find a way, is his promise.
At least he's honest. How many people do you hear that openly just say, is this all genocide? Like, you know?
Refreshing honesty.
Exactly. Most people try to keep that on the wraps, but no. Not Barbecue. Absolutely not.
Many people are now putting up, you know, paintings of Barbecue as the honest man that he is.
I will kill people and cook my opponent.
Yes, he will indeed.
And eat him, kept. Yeah.
But this reminded me of a time before time, back when Donald Trump was in charge. And you may remember that it was rather funny because he came out and referred to Haiti as a shithole, which I'm just going to remind everyone by playing this.
Question why the United States would allow people from Haiti and Africa into the country. Describing those places using an expletive while suggesting people from Norway might be more acceptable. He reportedly made the comments during a White House meeting with a bipartisan group of senators. The White House tonight is not denying the president made the remarks.
I love that, yeah.
Because someone might have recorded it.
We now go to General Barbecue for his opinion.
Exactly.
Well, this was back then. So as you can see, where's the date for this? 6 years ago, this statement was made.
When the world was a better place.
And the response was not just the news being upset. All the funny men had something to say. Let's enjoy this crap, I guess.
Own version of Make America Great Again hats. It's a hat that says Haiti is great already. We offered it to them and they were quite happy to have it. People really like the slogan.
Oh, thank you.
Look at Elon Musk's comment. They should pop by for a visit. Say hi to Barbecue. I hear he grows a great steak.
Who knows? Who knows? But you may remember, you can see Bill Maher here jumping on with his bollocks. And we'll get back to that later. But Conan's not the only one. Trevor Noah did a thing where he just sat here whining about how dare you call it a shithole. Don't you know that America's a shithole compared to Norway?
Mm.
So,
good point.
You got us there. Turns out Haiti's a paradise.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why none of them live there. Odd. Odd development.
Jimmy Kimmel did a thing where he was upset, pretendedly so, because who doesn't know this?
Pretendedly so.
Not legitimate, is it?
No, but it's a really funny way of describing it. He's upset, pretendedly so. I mean, that describes all of this all the time.
Yeah. And it continued. And I want to just quickly go over Haitian history.
Oh, yeah.
I jumped over to Encyclopedia Britannica because I trust them all on Wikipedia, right?
Sure.
Don't give that a read. So I did give it a read this morning. And the quick Cliff Notes version is...
it's not good.
Yeah, it's not fantastic. French slave colony, slaves revolted. And
all the white people.
Won their independence. Now, according to Britannica, that didn't happen. So, according to them, what happened is that the new guy, Louverture, he decided that he was going to get all the peasants now, because they weren't slaves, and make them go back to work forcibly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which isn't slavery, because it's a military dictatorship of the peasants.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Obviously,
they all agree, so it's fine.
Uh-huh. The Europeans started leaving for no reason, who knows why. And then the French reinvaded and lost, because Napoleon. And then civil wars follow, and then blah, 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 blah. There's just endless political instability.
And then you end up with, is it Papa Doc?
Who's the
voodoo dictator of Haiti?
But as you mentioned that, they forget to mention the massacre, which is that the slaves took over and then just butchered all the white people, specifically the French in this example. There's a drawing at the time with this fella, with a lovely white woman. He's just decapitated. Why? Ah, she was French. Didn't matter if she owned slaves, they had to go. Now, the reason this is really important is not just because it's unprecedented, but what it did, because as you can see, that's in the start of the 1800s, is that this story went to the United States, and obviously all the southern states, even if you were supporting abolishing slavery, those people were like,
they saw the writing on the wall.
Maybe we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll kill us all. And that had a huge impact on the expansion of slavery for a number of years in the United States. So not a small historical thing, a big historical thing.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why California didn't have slavery and yet is still paying reparations.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I have family that live there, so they're getting reparations.
Oh, congratulations.
And I'm like, you realize our tribe actually made a lot of money. Has anyone read a history book?
Yeah, well, they should have paid.
No.
I'm just like, just give me a cut.
Are your family just being like, they should have paid more, right? That was good merchandise.
No one has read a history book. I'm like, they could just look up your names.
Well, don't tell them.
Yeah, okay.
But that's not the end
part of my inheritance.
Haitian history, I want to do the quick lesson on, is because Haitian history is just mad.
Yeah.
It's just constant madness. Mm. Because that's the start of it. Okay, slave revolt. You might think that's noble or something, and then they killed all the white people for no reason. I was like, oh, that's a bad idea. Now no one likes you. What did they do next? Well, they declared war on their neighbor, their only neighbor. Because why not? The reason being that they'd ruined their own economy. So they thought, okay, well, let's just invade our neighbor. And then they ruined their economy. And then the Dominicans rose up in an independence war against them and won. Okay, not a great start. What was followed by that?
It lasted almost 12 years.
Yeah. Followed was just political instability to the point that the United States even got pissed off and decided to invade Haiti because it was being too silly, and then decided to build a load of infrastructure in the hope that that would make them sort themselves out, and then buggered off in the 30s. What happened next? Political instability, which led to a dictator.
Oh, there's Papa Doc.
Yeah. I mean, I just, you know, he's got a hell of a resume.
I just think voodoo dictator is just such a cool thing to
You know what I mean? If you're going to be a dictator, like, you know, leave your mark in history. Like, you can't just be like a dictator. We've already had those. You need to like have something special.
Become a voodoo dictator.
Exactly. Yeah.
Set up death squads. Set up a massive personality cult.
Yeah.
Just kill anyone whoever slightly annoys you, and then put your son in charge. And then he does the same. Yeah, that didn't go well either. And then more political instability, and then blah, 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 blah. We're here, where you can go on Live Map and read the news that the international airport has been taken over by the local gang. Great.
That's encouraging.
That's great.
I forgot to add earthquakes as well. The country never recovered. And I use the term recovered because it's not like it was an economic powerhouse to begin with from the earthquakes. But I mean, it was just, I remember, you know, what is it? Wyclef Jean, he was part of the Fugees, that's it, with Lauryn Hill. He tried to run for president of Haiti because he's originally Haitian. He was barred because he owed too much taxes to the IRS.
Oh, really?
And they were like, yeah, if you go to Haiti, not only are you going to soak up all of that money, we're never going to see the money you owe us.
Oh.
So he wasn't allowed to run, which was interesting.
But you're right to bring up the earthquakes. I did forget that. So 2004, massive storm destroys the place. And then there's the 2010 earthquake, which probably everyone remembers.
Yep.
It was a big deal on TV.
All the celebrities sang.
Yeah.
Yeah, some awful song.
And then the UN turned up to help. Nice. They massively increased the amount of cholera in the country and had to issue a public apology for that.
Oh, as you do.
Because they mixed wastewater with drinking water. Good job, guys. They then raped a bunch of kids.
Okay.
And then no one got held to account. So, yeah, they're not considered very well off either. Mm. And then in 2021, the president gets assassinated. There's another massive earthquake in 2021, which you may less remember because everyone was sort of kind of done with it at that point. And in between, you've got the Hillary Clintons turning up, stealing money and everything else. So there's that. But now we're here. Now, this video, as you can see, has been deleted. This
probably for the best because we can't show it.
Yeah, that's the reason I chose
that
this.
That is horrifying.
I saw this video before.
Cannibal gang eating body parts of one of their victims as he cooks in the fire.
So you can see this online.
Oh, you saw it?
To. Yeah, I saw it. Yeah. It's pretty grim.
Oh, God.
He's literally a big old human leg and he's shoving it in the fire and then it's num, num, num. Because
apparently it tastes like pork. As I don't know why I looked it up, but I wondered what human meat tastes like, and it tastes
apparently.
The islands around Australia where human meat is called long pork. That's the actual traditional name for it. And I was like, why do they call it that? Because it most resembles pork.
It's weird because pork also tastes like pork, and it comes without the moral burden of
exactly,
human.
Exactly.
Which is why I tend to prefer pork over long. Pork.
Me too. I'm guilty.
I'm old fashioned.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a weird way of looking at it.
I prefer ham over thigh.
Yeah, but people are like, oh, it tastes like pork. Is it? They say it's like, that's a justification to eat it.
But who responds to that by being like, well, I wish I could taste human, so I'll have to eat pig?
Well, I didn't say I wish I could taste human, but the justification again, well, look, it's, you know, eating human may sound gross, but it tastes like pork, and you like pork. You love bacon.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, yeah, but I'd rather eat the pig.
I wonder what part of the human body is bacon. Probably the butt.
Okay, moving on. Because that story is, as I mentioned, just an average day. Like, literally, who cares? Like, this place has never been stable. It's never going to be stable.
And it's too economically irrelevant for it to inspire foreign intervention, unfortunately.
Like, it's just a joke. So the responses to it are really what I found interesting. Now, there's one response from a Mr. Bukele.
Oh, really? Is it a sensible response?
His response was, lol, lmao even. How could you deal with gangs? I don't know. See ya. As you can see here, he's just joking. He's like, man, imagine having gang problems. That would be terrible. Which, I don't know. That's very based. I gotta admit.
But this is the thing. All the experts said they couldn't be defeated because they were an intrinsic part of our society, and they were wrong. We just obliterated them. Just literally, that simple.
They must be done in Haiti.
I don't know why, but I'm getting like what? Why? What would like an alternate reality look like if Norway had colonized?
What, Haiti?
Haiti, yeah. Instead, it would still.
You'd see a lot of blonde people with tans.
I remember which island. I think it's the Virgin Islands that used to have a lot of Danish people before we got them.
Oh, really?
There you are.
Yeah.
Virgin Islands. Yeah, okay. I might be wrong about that.
But and the Dutch had a fair role in some parts of West Africa as well.
So he did also issue another statement where he did offer to become the dictator of Haiti and clean it up. He's not had a response to that yet, but maybe he'll be getting a phone call from that PM.
Can't believe General Barbecue hasn't taken him up on it.
Exactly. He might be next. He might be lunch. Yeah, who knows? Yeah.
But the average leftist Westerner had a different take, which is that this is violence
really?
Against them, to dare point out.
Oh, well, this is good. In Haiti, as in Palestine, the West gets away with most obscene Hitlerite propaganda to justify its violent agenda.
Hitlerite is not a word.
This is him pointing to an article where they mention the cannibal gang leader has taken over the place and is eating people.
But what violent agenda do we have towards Haiti? Seems like God himself
for
is
what reason as well? There's like nothing like, what are we going to colonize Haiti for? The plantains?
I don't know.
Anyway,
I don't know what's there.
This is clearly a very pork, mentally.
Callum, I know you're against immigration, but imagine the restaurants.
Exactly. Imagine the bacon.
Have you considered the British cuisine is just that boring?
But now we have the recipes for human leg. Do we need the immigrants, is what I'm saying. But the thing is, that's Haiti's story.
Strange. What a strange link.
Yeah,
person's clearly mentally unwell.
What do you even do with leftists at that point where they're just like, wow, this is just like Palestine. Oh, shut up.
You send them there to do their duty.
Yeah. Hitlerite, what?
So the reason I mention all this is because you've got Haiti on one side. Now, if people know the geography, of course, you've got the Dominican Republic on the other. And as mentioned, Haiti invaded and occupied the Dominican Republic before they were kicked out. So there's not the best of relations. The Dominicans also did a couple of big old massacres on the Haitians, but point being, two different parts of the same island. A little bit of a climate difference, but that's about it.
And, oh yeah, I'm sure the climate difference is massive.
Yeah. Huge.
Night and day.
I wonder if we can turn off dark mode on this, John, because it's screwing up my ability to read that one there. But
mortality.
This is Vox. Now, Vox even had to admit, okay, there's a bit of a difference between these two.
It's a bit.
Yes. Infant mortality, like twice. Yeah. On Haiti, life expectancy significantly better in the Dominican Republic one. AIDS problem, GDP. I mean, that's just comical. The difference there. This was 10 times. So then there's the unemployment rate. And this is just from one guy at Vox who toured both of them and was like, for some reason, one of them is really badly managed and the other one seems to be doing all right.
I can't believe that the Spanish speakers have a neighbor to which they're objectively economically superior.
It's incredible. They can't believe their luck.
As a result, as mentioned, that border is nice and secure.
Yeah.
Because the average wage in the Dominican Republic is $800 a month. The average wage in Haiti a month is $134.
Yeah.
That's, you're sharing an island. You need to build a border for that.
I mean...
Do you have a picture of the border?
Yeah.
We'll get to it in a minute, I suppose. Okay. But getting back to the funny men, because Conan himself went there after making that funny jibe about, ha-ha-ha, it's not a shithole. He was like, look, I'm there in 2018.
He doesn't look convinced. Look at his face. He does not look convinced.
How is it that a Norwegian is also there? How does Norway keep getting roped into this?
I know.
He went there, and I'll be honest, I looked at all of his videos about it. It seems like the most orchestrated trip I've ever seen.
Okay.
It probably was.
In this bit here, he's got a Norwegian who says that she lives in Haiti, and she'd rather live in Haiti than in the United States. She would only go to the United States after Donald Trump is gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay.
Glad she gets a say on that.
Things got better after that.
What NGO does she work for?
Yeah. The thing is, I decided to go check out more and more of what he did, because it's just kind of funny. But
Conan in Haiti?
Yeah, I mean, he mostly just seemed to stay in some tourist resort and came away with the opinion that it's beautiful.
Mm.
Haiti is truly a beautiful country. Mm, yeah, I suppose. I mean, that does look pretty good.
Yeah.
Now let's have a look at the responses. Because the responses are just pictures of the place outside of the resort, which, yes.
That's brilliant.
It's,
I love that.
Down principle there, which, okay. So there's that. People just kept going. That's a fella throwing out baby with the bathwater.
No, don't be doing that. That's pork. That's pork harvesting.
I suppose it is.
They're going to make ham. Okay.
Yeah. How do you not? So yeah, people were just like, this is stupid. Now, if you go and watch his full videos about this, he actually explicitly says, no, I am engaging in propaganda. He says,
oh, well, okay then.
Wow.
The purpose of the trip, these are his words, the purpose of the trip was to show only the good sides of Haiti. I was like, oh. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you lie, that's pretty easy. Not the hardest thing. But getting back to some of the not-so-good sides, I mean, for people who haven't seen it, there is a beautiful video from the guy who used to work at Reason on dirt cookies, which I suppose we're just going to enjoy the
dirt cookies.
Not heard of these. They're better please than some
traditional delicacy.
I would hope so. Please tell me you're joking.
No. Let's watch.
What in
Traded,
the hell?
Sold, and even hoarded by women here in the poorest section of the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. City Soleil in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. Small amounts of vegetable shortening, salt, and occasionally sugar are mixed in with the dirt and water as well. Made in places like this, an old fort where torture was once common by corrupt dictators here. Fort Dimanche is now a center of commerce built around the dirt cookies, a basketball court, soccer field, and school for hundreds of kids, and home to many. To get to the basketball court, which acts as a preparation area for the dirt cookies, you have to cross this open sewer, which is littered with animal parts and trash and other nasty things, to get to an area where the cookies are laid out to dry out in the sun.
Oh, taste one.
You can see that these are still very wet, not quite ready to be served, but this is literally dirt being prepared for humans to eat on top of other dirt and filth. Celine Denise.
I'm laughing because it's just so horrific.
Honestly, it's, yeah.
It sounds made up.
There's people really eating does. Dirt. This is a real thing. I also just love how he's like, well, these clearly aren't ready. That's raw dirt cookies. I'm not eating that. That's cookie dough. And it's, no, that's the reality for a lot of people. I mean, when you've got a country where people are eating dirt, I mean, it brings a whole new meaning to Conan sat over there with his pina colada or whatever. And he's just like, look, Haiti's wonderful. Have you not seen how you can go to a beach?
Just saying, suddenly everyone's listening to General Barbecue's campaign promises, yeah. Aren't they?
Yeah.
Dirt cookies or the barbecue? Come on, what are you going for?
Or the new kind of pork. Yeah.
Horrifying.
So that's the reality. They do a bunch of interviews and things, and it's just not fun. So there's that. But do go and check it out, because it's a hell of a documentary, if nothing else. But he also spent his time hanging out in fancy kitchens, showing off, look, Haiti has wonderful food. I believe he actually starts this off by talking about how good Haitian cuisine is.
So while I'm here, what if I learned how to make Haitian food? And perfect place to do it is a place called World Central Kitchen. I thought maybe I could learn to make Haitian food, and in return, maybe I would teach them how to toast a Pop-Tart.
Yeah, okay, right.
Are they not making dirt cookies then?
No, no. Do you want to know where this is? It's not the same place where the dirt cookies are drying out.
Really? Where is it?
This place here. You can see the larger houses here.
Oh, and I see swimming pools.
There's swimming pools in these ones. So
this is the place where the armed guards are.
Yeah, look at the lush bit. Look at all the greenery.
Wow, swimming pools, etc. If you scroll out a bit and then just like, you know, go anywhere else in the bloody place, it doesn't look so cool. It looks a bit...
Fewer swimming pools in this
place.
Fewer, yeah. Looks more like a...
But there we are. Mm-hmm. That's that. I also just love the line. I didn't catch it there, but you can find it in the video where he says, Haiti is known for its cuisine, which, all right.
I'm sure that is
true.
Not the cuisine he's going to have, but yeah.
Well, end this off, because he also did some other thing here where he got interviewed by some girl, and the girl here says, we don't need the United States. They took our riches.
Oh, gosh. She's also ahistorical.
What riches?
Yeah.
You know, the riches.
They was here.
Riches.
Somewhere.
Yeah. All the gold.
Yeah.
Should we see a graph?
At least the British were practical about these things.
I've got a graph here. And this, I show a lot of data, but this is probably the most stark one I've ever seen in my life. This is GDP per capita for the Dominican Republic right next door and Haiti. People listening, the Haitian one since the 1940s is a flat line.
Yeah.
It's actually gone down.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, it's gone down.
The Dominican Republic is an exponential growth. Almost textbook.
Remarkable for Spanish speakers.
It's incredible.
I mean, I'm sorry, but this is why it's just another average day. I mean, local barbecue lunatic who eats people has taken over country, holds government hostage.
I'm surprised it took him this long.
Some part of the world are just like this.
I mean, he could literally walk into the Dominican Republic, beg for some money, and then use that money to bribe whoever like is in charge in Haiti. They've probably never seen so much money in their lives before.
200 buckaroos, woo.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's that. I didn't really know what I was doing with this, except explaining some of the world is like that, and that is horrifying.
Yeah.
Just remember, things are bad here, but they could always be worse.
You could always be Haitian. Let's move on.
So speaking of things being bad here, let's talk about the war on terror as it translates to the British context. So as we were told by the 2021 census, there are 3.9 million Muslims in the UK, which makes them 6.5% of the population. And 67% of the terror attacks since 2018.
Amazing.
So you might think that when...
I mean, you can find even more shocking statistics. So if you go back to 1998, over a quarter of all terror suspects arrested have been of asylum, mainly Muslim background.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you blow it up to even back 20, 30 years ago, it's still quite significant.
Yeah. And so they're three quarters of MI5's caseload.
75%.
Yeah.
75% of MI5's time is spent on Islamists.
On this 6.5%
demographic. It's incredible that we tolerate this, but countries, Muslim majority countries, don't tolerate this.
No, they don't tolerate it because they're not stupid.
Yeah.
But we're really stupid. But the thing is, I think this just comes down to two different approaches, right? So their approach is the kind of Bukelian, let's incisively get in there, deal with the problem, and then that's the problem over. Whereas ours... it's kind of like the Russian approach to war, where we just take it and take it and take it until eventually the enemy runs out of bullets, right? And then we win.
Yeah. Which is a military strategy that's only worked in about 50% of the wars that the Russians have had. So we're literally gambling with our future.
Something like that. This is the UK's countering terrorism report for 2023, came out late last year. And they say, well, look, this is costing us billions a year. 67% of the attacks have come from this one community, three quarters of the MI5 caseload, and 64% of those in custody for terrorism-connected offences are coming from those communities. And so if we were to look at, say, the prescribed terror groups in the United Kingdom, it's vaguely reflective of that. So you can...
So that's the law.
Yeah, so that's the law. And then, you know, we get to...
some of the groups.
Yeah, there's a Sikh one there, which is interesting. But
I don't see any Catholic ones.
I mean,
Abu Nidal organization,
yeah.
Abu Saif group, Al Astir Brigades, Al Jamaat Al Islamia.
It's just a lot of owls.
You get to the ill.
Yeah.
Ansar Ali Atomwaffen. There we are.
Boko Haram.
Yeah. Egyptian Islamic Jihad, you know, like. But there is a Nazi one there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The funny thing about the far right ones, because I've looked at this, is they're usually like this American lunatic group exists.
Or Norwegian, actually. There was one founded by a Norwegian guy.
But it's like, okay, but no one in the UK is a member or cares.
Yeah.
I mean, cool.
But at least we can still find out how to prescribe Germans.
Globalism, Islamic Media Front.
Yeah. Again,
it's incredible media? That with a quick Google search, you can see how the scales or the magnitude of the threat are so clearly coming from one particular sort of community or group or whatever.
Yeah.
And yet when our politicians talk, you would never get that sense. It's like, are you familiar with your own government's legislation?
Yeah.
Hezbollah, Hizbullah Tahrir. They're new on the list.
Indian Mujahideen. Oh, okay.
Yep. Islamic Army of Adin, Jihad Union, Islamic Movement, Islamic State.
Yeah.
Jamaat al-Muhammad.
I mean, again.
Jamaat al-Sabal. I'm sorry, but
that was impressive.
Yeah. A million names in it.
But again, as you can see, there is a slight.
Slight difference.
National Action.
National Action. Found it.
But don't clap. Yeah. No. We found another right wing one instead of just all Muslims.
Yeah.
Well, they look like they hate everyone.
Yeah,
they're racist, anti-Semitic, homophobic. They just need like a couple more and they're good.
So there's a weird thing here with them as well. They're banned.
Weirdly, not Islamophobic.
Yeah, which is weird.
But the rest of them, they're all banned for like committing terrorism. These guys are banned for a tweet, which was interpreted as terrorism.
Yeah.
Which is a call to action. But again, I mean, not many bombs.
Yeah. Lamenting the murder of Joe Cox, instantly.
You mean celebrating.
Celebrating.
I mean, that's a communist one there.
Partia Kurdistan.
Kurdistan Workers'
Party. They're all in Turkey.
Yes.
None of them are in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, these are all communist ones, actually.
Revolutionary.
Left-wing nationalists. Again,
Salafist group. Well, that was the end of it.
But
Pakistan.
Oh, look, there's
Pakistanis have a huge problem. Most of these groups are from Pakistan. Yeah. How do they even identify them or different, like different shapes?
I think the point's been made that there are three far right ones and like 100.
Oh, there's Wagner Group.
That's
four.
A Russian one, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Four.
Bunch of Russians that don't exist.
Out of 60.
I'm not sure we can consider the Russian group a far right group from Western standards because they're.
Okay, three and a half.
Just don't exist anymore. Like, they even got murdered in Russia. Though.
But anyway, so
no, their leader just had a plane crash. It's like, as
of course,
yeah, exactly.
The general thesis from the establishment, and this is the politicians, the media, the academics, any talking head you'll ever find on TV, is well, look, terrorism is obviously bad. We have to agree with that. But there's no connection between terrorism and any community. Terrorism has no community. You know, it's just. Something that happens. There's no
an isolation
for.
Exactly.
And in fact, what we need to do is make sure that we don't ever blame a community for terrorism.
It's good stand-up, man.
I am steel manning their position as much as I can, and that this is something they say. And so recently, the latest attempt at this has been, I think, rather macabre, because it's just, that, I mean, there are certain levels of don't look back in anger that actually start to really annoy me. And it's when the British government starts employing the victims of the Islamic terror attacks. This really, really annoys me. In fact,
it's like pro-level gaslighting.
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently more than 50 victims of Islamist-inspired terror attacks have signed a joint letter against what they describe as anti-Muslim hate.
You don't have to do this.
Yeah.
You don't have
to. I don't care how much pressuring you are paying you. You don't have to do this.
Maybe it's like a form of conversion. Like, you know, some of the victims of the Rotherham grooming gangs have become like staunchly, like devoutly Christian. And so there's maybe their coping mechanism. So maybe the government's like, you know, you can hit out this new religion of like supreme gaslighting.
Maybe.
Your new
coping
strategy.
I just kind of hate it. So there's this charity called Survivors Against Terror who wrote a letter. And I'm just going to read it because it's just... While this is the way that things are done, nothing can ever get better. As victims and survivors of terror attacks that were driven by Islamist extremism, we are all only too aware of its threat. It has had a devastating impact on our own lives and killed the people we love. Fighting it and defeating it should be a national priority. To defeat this threat, the single most important thing we can do is to isolate the extremists and terrorists from the vast majority of British Muslims who deplore such violence. How do we do that?
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming they're going to prescribe how to do that soon.
No, they don't.
True.
That's the entire.
Oh no, then it's a synopsis of what's going on.
No, that's the entire letter there.
Just hang on.
The thing is, like, are we incapable of having a mature and frank conversation? Okay, yes, there is anti-Muslim hatred, but clearly the vast majority of the threat that society faces in terms of terrorism is coming from one specific group of people. Can we not say that?
Nope.
And when polled, what are their opinions? Because that claim there that the vast majority of Muslims abhor this stuff. Okay, we'll poll them.
There's research on this. Like, it's clear as day, and it's usually, and no surprise, there are groups that are the most poorly integrated in Britain that don't bother even learning English. Which you have to learn English, presumably, to get a British passport. But you can live in England for decades and not know how to drive because you can't speak English, not even bother learning speaking English, not teaching, not even adopting certain values, let alone teaching them to your kids. I mean, it's incredible. It's so brazen as well. And I'm just thinking to myself, you realize you can't do this in like literally anywhere else. You certainly can't go to India and do this. You can't go to Nigeria and do this. But
somewhere
somehow,
in Arabia, can you have the kind of stuff
honestly,
our mosques that they wouldn't accept it?
Honestly.
All.
But
anyway, so they say in recent weeks, there have been too many cases, and this is the real issue. Politicians have been sidling closer and closer to the line of saying, guys, I think I've located the problem.
The government department did give me that report.
Yeah. Too many cases where politicians and others have failed to do this. In some cases, equating being Muslim with being an extremist, facilitating anti-Muslim hate or failing to challenge it.
No one's done
you know that. What Rishi Sunak's speech was like? It was like, you know, when you go to a playground and you have that teacher being like, kids, separate, stop it. It's like treating it like that. Like everyone's bad. Everyone's naughty, like wagging their finger. I'm like, clearly the, like, I don't know, 15 stone built like a brick shit house is a bigger threat to like the 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, clear, clearly there's a disparity.
40-year-old man.
Exactly.
Yeah,
clearly there is a disparity here.
There are faults on both sides.
Exactly. Five-year-old, stop it. Stop throwing your, like, I don't know, dummy at him.
And that's basically what this comes down to. Because, of course, Rishi Sunak came out and said, well, you know, Islamist extremism and the far right, basically the same problem that we're facing. And in fact, they carry on. They say this is not only wrong in itself, but it makes the job of Islamist extremists easier and plays into the hands of terrorists. We also know where anti-Muslim hate can lead. This month is the fifth anniversary of the horrific far-right terror attack in Christchurch, New Zealand, that killed 51 Muslims at two mosques.
Yeah, how was that caused?
That's interesting, isn't it? Because that's the only act of actual terrorism they call out in this letter.
How was it caused?
And most of the terrorism that other Muslims face are from other Muslims.
Yes, that's true.
About 99%. I'm just putting a figure out there.
I'm sorry, but literally, how was that one terrorist attack caused?
That's a good point, actually. I don't remember.
There was a particular attack. Wasn't it the Bataclan Massacre or something like that?
No. Why did that guy in New Zealand go and do what he did?
Because he was crazy.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows, because you remember the time.
They're just associated with a far right, which now I don't even know what does far right mean now?
I don't know, and I'm too afraid to find out.
The guy published a manifesto literally laying out why he did it, and the media went with Candace Owens is at fault.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, PewDiePie as well.
PewDiePie and Candace Owens did this.
I'm so glad I didn't know this, because I would despair for humanity even more.
The real reason is that he traveled the world, including a lot of Muslim nations, and they came out of it as an anti-Muslim.
No, he went to France.
Yeah, he went to France.
Not the best.
As I said, he went to the Muslim
endorsement.
Going to France radicalized him,
and he became a radical anti-Muslim hating person. Hmm. And okay, but that's how that happened. He did not listen to Rishi Sunak.
No,
he did not listen to Lee Anderson. Like, stop.
I did not know this.
This doesn't follow.
Yes, but anyway, so they say. Well, Islamist-inspired extremism is our country's most pressing terror threat. Like that. While, let's take that and put that over
the
there
most pressing.
Yeah. They admit, you know, okay, it's undeniable that, you know,
75%.
Yeah, I mean, but we'll take that and we'll put that to the side. It is not the only one.
Oh, okay. So it's conceding that it is.
Let's equivocate, because we've already talked about a far-right terror attack. Let's talk about more far-right terror attacks, because that's the real issue. But what I love about this is that they're just admitting, look, we can't talk to those people. Like, there's no reasoning with people on that side, the majority issue. There's no reason, but maybe we can reason with this minority issue over here.
So, but how do you, but the thing is, how they talk about isolating these extremists, fine. How do you do that?
Yeah, that's the unanswerable question, isn't it? But they say that it's not the only one, and responding to it by feeding far-right extremism, dividing our communities and exaggerating the risk will feed a cycle of extremism that put more people at risk. Signed by 58 survivors of the following. 15 different terror attacks. Bali, 7th of July bombings, the Bataclan Paris attack, Fishmongers Hall in London, Forbury Gardens, Reading, ISIS, Syria, Israel, London Bridge, Manchester Arena, Brussels. I mean, the list goes on, and they're all...
I don't think they got people from all of these.
Sorry. Did they not see the problem with doing that? Here's this one far-right terror attack. By the way, we're all survivors of blah, 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 blah.
And what's the commonality of all those 15 other attacks? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I don't think they got people from every single one of these. I refuse to believe that.
No, they did. They did. They've got the signatures underneath.
Wow.
But
it's a lot of attacks, isn't it?
It's really atrocious to try and weaponize the victims. Aaron's killed. Attacks.
This is like Brass Eye.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. This is like a Brass Eye sketch.
Yeah.
It's like we. Loads of us who have all been victims of this one group. We're here to call out a different group that engaged in a very small amount of this.
We're here to call out anti-Muslim hate. Because what they're saying is, look, just because that happens, you know, just because this keeps happening.
The real problem is the far right.
I wouldn't even have a problem with this if they actually gave us a solution.
Well, you're not allowed to allow this to stigmatize a particular community, right? That's what they're saying. This you are not allowed to have a particular opinion about this community because of all of this terrorism.
I'm sorry, I can't get over looking at that.
And to be honest with you, you know, as a member of the far right community, I don't want them stigmatizing me because of that.
I'm not Australian for one. Like.
Yeah.
So what does stigmatize look like? Asking questions, being critical?
No,
I mean, and how do you
put anti-Muslim hate?
How do you identify that? What exactly does
an anti-Muslim hater
look like?
I guess anti-Muslim hate would look like...
hater look like? Because we know what the KKK looks like.
Trump not allowing Muslim immigration from like 8 different Muslim countries.
Somalia.
Yeah, that's like anti-Muslim hate, I think. Because I mean, like a sensible government policy would be like to look at a particular community and say, right, okay, that's been disproportionately disruptive to the national life. It's costing us millions of pounds. There's a huge amount of benefits that go to the community. Maybe we'll be a bit more selective about where we take immigrants.
Yeah.
Right. But that would be racism. So
you know, the most annoying thing that I hear when people are like, oh, but if they change the immigration policy, you wouldn't have been allowed to come in or whatever. Like, oh, you know what? You're right. I want the country to base its immigration policy based on my personal circumstances. That sounds like a great way to run a country.
But again, it's not to say that you know, no people can come in. It's just that you can
vet them, like having a door in your own house where you vet people.
We can be discerning.
Yeah. Right?
That's the thing. And we're not discerning, and people are dying, and then the survivors of these attacks have got to come out and go, look, guys, don't be racist. It's like, okay.
But this is like a huge group of Europeans who are all victims of fascist aggression from the Germans, right? Getting together and saying that, oh, I don't know.
Anti-German hate is
terrible.
Well, worse than that, because they won't condemn the anti-German. They're not concerned about the Germans who have murdered all the family. Instead, they're concerned about, well, I don't know, Spanish imperialism.
Also, that's not a very good example, because they found the anti-Muslim hate can lead. Because they found basically the only example of a non-Muslim or someone identifying with that faith attacking majority Muslim people. They found like literally the only example. Don't they see the irony there?
There have been like two or three other ones, but it's very, very small in comparison to the amount of caseload work.
I just don't understand what the like...
Yeah, the ones on the screen.
I mean, yeah.
Anyway. So this is the organization, Survivors Against Terror. Apparently they were launched in 2018, which I'm slightly skeptical of, as we'll get to in a minute. But they were launched as a network of terror survivors.
Okay.
Against people who have been attacked by terror. Just undifferentiated.
Just terror.
Floating terror concept. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they've all been terrorized by a particular ideology is not something that we're going to talk about. But their funding comes from donations by the public as well as from trusts, foundations, because they're a registered charity. Now, if you're a registered charity, that means that your financial situation has to be made public. And so you can go to the government and have a look. And this is interesting because I can't see it. So I can't see who's paying the victims of these terror attacks to tell everyone not to be Islamophobic. Apparently, this is a newly registered
charity. Yeah, and it doesn't need to update
its information until 10 months have passed after the first financial period. So,
first financial period, but this 2018?
Yeah.
Surely you should have had a few financial periods by now.
It's every year, actually. So they must have been founded about a year and a half ago at most, I would suggest.
Yeah, or registered. Wow, this is interesting.
But they're lying.
I don't know.
Well, clearly they're lying.
I'm not saying they're lying. I'm just saying, I mean, it could be a bureaucratic issue on the back end, because I mean, we are dealing with the government's charity commission here.
If they were founded in 2018.
I don't know.
The last 5 years, whoopsie daisies.
Yeah, we just forgot to...
6 years now.
Do you remember that woman that said Susan Hussey was a racist, the one who founded that charity and got dressed up like what I can only describe as a fetish priest? She was like this woman of like Bayesian origin that created this... Ngozi Fulani. You know the one who went to the palace with like the whole get up. I don't know. She thought she was on the set of Black Panther.
Right.
And Prince William's godmother asked, okay, where are you from? And
oh, she was like,
that was racist. And exactly. And I remember people saying, oh, that's so racist. I'm like, okay, every person of a West African background is looking at this clown show. Like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Like, she chose a name that like doesn't, like she chose a tribe as her last name. Like, people don't name themselves tribes. That's like naming yourself pencil.
Right.
Like it's so my mom looked at it, was like, she called herself Ngozi Fulani. So clearly this person is not from there.
Yeah.
And she had a charity. And because she went public with this saying, look at how racist someone was, even though she didn't, they investigated a charity. She had to shut it down because there were some anomalies with the declaring of her accounts.
Yeah.
And I suspect this is probably going the same way.
I suspect so too. But anyway, this charity...
This doesn't make any sense.
...was founded by a guy called Brendan Cox. Brendan Cox is the husband, or was the husband, of Joe Cox, who was actually murdered by a far-right terrorist. So that was, I think, an interesting connection. And he runs a non-profit, which isn't a charity, called More in Common. And what they do, and this is what I think the particularly interesting thing, Convince campaigners, politicians, and institutions of the benefits of a big tent approach and dissuading them from pursuing culture wars which serve no one.
We try and shut people up.
Yeah. We try to divert
big tent approaches.
The attention.
What does that
away
even
from? Well, what they're trying to say is the argument's already settled. We have had this discussion. We're going to endure Islamist terror attacks forever. And so this becomes a war of attrition.
Be quiet for the sake of diversity, basically. Kind of, yeah. Exactly what they told the Rochdale grooming gang victims.
Yeah, that's okay. Basically what he's saying. We're not, no. That's a culture war. We're not engaging in that. We've already had that. Now we're going to...
As if even culture wars don't matter. As if it's like you shouldn't live, you know, we all don't live in a culture and it doesn't...
Yeah. Values.
Exactly.
Conflict of values.
So bizarre.
But that's one of the things that really jumped out at me because, of course, this is all about a conflict of values. You know, there are some people who want to say, look, I think actually maybe the Islamist terrorists are not these free-floating radicals who just happen to keep coming out of this one community. And maybe there's a congenital problem in that community. And they say, well, that's a culture war and that makes you a racist and that's illiberal to do that. And therefore, the argument's been settled. We're going to do it this way. And so what you're going to have to do is just endure all of these terror attacks forever until the Islamists eventually just get tired or run out of bullets or something like that because there is simply no other option.
The vast majority of Muslims do what they do in Muslim countries and take them out themselves, in which case the paradigm has completely shifted.
And so when asked about this, the victims say, well, the real problem is the government. Have you okay. considered that, Callum? I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm all on board with saying the real problem is the government, right? More than 130 survivors were surveyed by Survivors Against Terror, and they said, yep, the government was the issue. For example, one example is Joanne McSorley, who was hit by 31 pieces of shrapnel in the Manchester Arena bombing. She told the BBC that she had been degraded by being told to repeatedly prove the severity of her injuries, and after 6 years, the government finally gave her £25,000 as compensation.
For what?
She's for being permanently having life-altering disabilities imposed by the Manchester Arena bombing.
I don't think that's how that works or it should work.
Well, she says, well, I'm housebound, and quote, I put my faith in the systems and in the government. This was a terror attack, so I thought, of course, we'd be well looked after, but this didn't happen.
Okay, so maybe your gripe is with the person that carried out the attack?
One might think so. I mean, don't get me wrong. Obviously, I do think the UK government should fairly compensate these people. But
well,
then,
well, no, they should get rid of themselves for failing at their job.
The British government brought that bomber and his family.
Who was also of an asylum background. I'm just pointing
then,
that out.
Totally and then true. Gave him our money.
Yep.
To his mum. And his mum then gave the money to him to buy the bomb parts.
And then he went to the arena and the security guard didn't address him because even though he thought he looked suspicious, he didn't want to be accused of being a racist. Then he blew up the bomb, killing 22 women and children and wounding many others. Joanne McSorley is one of those people, and she says, quote, I put my faith in the systems and in the government because I'm not being sufficiently compensated.
The system is working as intended, my friend. It literally
employed there are no words.
Paid for his bomb to kill people.
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly, genuinely, tremendously sympathetic to this woman, but like, if we can't see how we're trapped in this kind of cycle where, I mean, it's just, I feel like I'm being gaslit.
Well, it's a double whammy because on the one hand, we're not addressing the problem, the internal problems we have with lack of social integration and you know, the broken asylum system and all of that. And on the other hand, we're literally letting in unvetted, mostly single males into the country.
Yep.
Failed society.
And then,
failed.
And then she's got to spend 6 years arguing with a bureaucrat to get a measly 25,000.
She might as well have just got a job at Tesco.
Exactly. Well, she can't work.
Oh, okay.
She's wounded from the attack that the government is not compensating her for, even though they brought
surely she's on disability benefits.
She's doubtless on disability benefits. But like, I think I agree that she is entitled to something considering the government brought in the attacker, paid for him to be here, paid for him to get the bomb, and
ruined her life.
Yeah.
Ruined her life, yeah. And it just, it's awful. I mean, The guy who had the narwhal tusk on the London Bridge attack, Daryl Frost, an actual hero, I would say, has been like, yeah, well, I mean, it's a paper-based postal system. You don't get much response or, the interest of every bureaucrat is to do as little work as possible because they are not paid on performance. And actually, every single person who they have to deal with is an issue in their day, is a problem that they would just rather not have to deal with. And so, you know, they keep asking for more evidence. You feel like you're on trial or scrounging. It's like, yep, yep. That's how the bureaucracy is going to deal with you. And so there's just this total system, recurring system of failure. And there's just this entire area of life you're not allowed to talk about.
Yep. We just didn't import people like that guy. Where, yeah. To be clear for people, like him and his family in this particular case were fighting with an Islamic group against Gaddafi. And then we ended up labeling them terrorists after the revolution. But we brought him in anyway.
As you
I was do. Like, right, okay, those guys are clearly going to end up being terrorists. Let's give them lots of tax money.
I don't think people realize how much worse this is about to get. I mean, the government had the audacity to brag about clearing the backlog of 67,000.
By just giving them.
But yeah. Seriously, they have, I mean, they just fast-tracked them through, yeah. Basically didn't, I don't even think they had face-to-face interviews with all of them.
I'd be shocked if they did.
But the way to break that circle of failure is just not to start the circle.
Yes.
Exactly. And to fix the mess you've already created at home.
But the thing is, I'm genuinely sympathetic to all of these people as well, because they are pawns in this process, right? They are the ones who are the victims of the attacks by people who were never invited in, but the government brought in anyway, and are not even being looked after. And all they can do is complain at the government, because if they identified the source of the terror, that would mean they're being anti-Muslim and they're hateful and they're calling all Muslims extremists and all this sort of stuff. So an actual conversation about why 2/3 to 3/4 of government anti-terror activity has to be focused on 6.5% of the population can never be addressed. And so that will never change. And all they can do is say, well, look, the bureaucrats are doing a bad job, which of course bureaucrats have always done a bad job.
I would love to pose this, that exact question you just had to anyone in parliament, right? Okay, fine. You've given your speech. Why are 2/3 of the government's efforts focused on this particular community? Is it just a coincidence? And they probably might say that.
They have to say that. They're committed to it, because anything else is anti-Muslim hatred. To say, well, okay, maybe there's an ethic in that community that
they would have to
say no. It can't be a moral question. Because then,
oh no, look, we shouldn't be focusing on that. No, but I just want to ask, do you have any idea why?
Yeah, but the thing is, then it would be anyone who held that moral system would be implicated. Mm. And that is illiberal, and you can't do that. And so it's got to be that this is just an unspoken thing, and you're a racist. So
We need like either a revolution or a dictator.
I don't think we're going to get either.
But I think that's what we need. We need like a dictator for like a good 10 years.
I don't think I want a dictator.
Throwing your hat in the ring?
I feel like we already have a dictator. We have a dictatorship of the civil service. Is it any different?
Mm.
Really?
But anyway, we'll leave that there, I guess.
For the video comments.
Yeah.
Don't have any video comments. Well, that makes it easier.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a $100 super chat from Blood for the Blood God. Thanks, man.
Oh, that's nice.
Saying drinks on me. Really appreciate it, man. Arizona Desert Rat says, hey, Callum, what's the date? Don't forget the date, Callum. What is the date?
Well, the next comment is from the letter M, and he says, I'm being so time zone inclusive. People didn't get why I did any of this. So the whole point was just focus on the things that matter, not the things that don't. And the things in video production that matter is good quality video and numbers as a result. That was why I did any of this. No one got that point, even slightly. They were just like, no, say the date autistically. Like,
I think the date matters.
It really doesn't.
Does.
The message is never going to go in their head.
Morgan says, well, hey, Esther's on. Let's go. Can you ask us to get Isabel Oakeshott on, please? Do you know Isabel Oakeshott?
Oh, yeah. I work with her quite a bit. Oh, I might do. Swindon's a bit far for her, though.
I don't really know anything about her, to be honest. Anne says, always appreciate when you have Esther on. She's polite and funny and has great insights. And that's good. System Philosopher Detroit says, here in Michigan, everyone recently got a letter in their mailbox from the government asking us to please consider taking immigrants into our homes. Supposedly, our wise and beneficent governor just decided that she will delegate Michigan to take in more illegal immigrants than we were previously. I yearn to live alone.
That's such a brazen ask.
It's mad, isn't it?
It's you know what? I had a really uncomfortable encounter with a guy. I don't know if he was homeless. I don't know what was wrong with him. He didn't seem all there. He just came and knocked on my window, on my car window while I was with my mother. And he was like, oh, can I have some spare change? I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't have any spare change. I'm in London. I don't carry around cash for obvious reasons. And he was like, oh, I just need £10. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry.
That's not spare change.
I'm sorry, I don't have money, like cash on me. And he was like, but I'm hungry. And he literally sounded like a petulant child. And I feel like this is exactly, oh yeah, would you consider just taking in people you don't know into your house with your family?
No. Just.
There's plenty of homeless we could put in there.
I mean, it's, forget about that. I mean, homeless people have just completely been ignored in every conversation about national prosperity and asylum and anything like that. They're just like, oh yeah, we don't have any homeless people in Britain. That's why we're important in ways of others.
Mm-hmm. Colin raises a really good question here. Less people are killed by illegals than legals. What happened to if it saves one life?
Yeah.
Great question.
That's a good question.
Now it's about just a balancing act.
Yeah, exactly.
500,000 murders. Let's add another 250,000 because it's less than 500,000.
Balance. Yeah, exactly.
Omar says, imagine being an illegal immigrant with all the accompanying freebies and privileges and being told that if you work really, really hard, you can become a legal citizen and lose all.
That's a really good point.
That is a really
good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I mean, I Googled the list of things you can do as an illegal migrant in the US. You can get a loan.
Really?
You can go to school. You can do
vote
that.
Vote in California.
Exactly. I mean, it's just, I'm like, why become a citizen and pay taxes?
Yeah. 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 Why am
exactly,
I paying taxes?
Exactly. Why? You know what? We should go to France and just come back on a boat. I feel like we should. And just like adopt new names.
I mean,
you can be Jorge Albil Martina. We can be from Haiti.
Just saying. I mean, I wouldn't mind a free hotel.
I mean, yeah, somewhere in Dover, four-star hotel.
Omar again says, the Democrat position is that problems are bad, but if you consider that pointing out that we aren't stopping it is worse. They don't have a problem with the word illegals. They hate the implicit reminder that law was broken when they invaded the country.
Yeah.
Kevin says, the only migrants who helped build America were the English, Mayflower, and the Irish and the Chinese. Then the Italians arrived, took control of what had been built. Here's the thing, though. None of them came in illegally. They all came legally.
That's true.
Screwtape Laser says, Esther is correct about the open borders team wanting cheap labor, but there is another hidden hand, developers profiting from government subsidized housing. The network of pro-immigration NGOs, council members, and developers is tightly connected. Yeah, it turns out that 20% of the Conservative Party's funding comes from housing developers.
Yeah, well, a fifth of the, people don't know this, a fifth of the English population are in public housing.
Yeah, a fifth.
It's ridiculous.
Sophie says, yes, the Venezuelan man who arrived yesterday somehow built the country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Arizona Desert Rat says, no, high areas with illegal immigration populations are not safer. The crime rate in those areas is beyond ridiculous. Well, who could have predicted that?
That's an odd coincidence.
I mean, it's so weird that they don't have any thought towards the sort of self-selection bias that illegal immigration might generate.
Mm.
It's not the good, honest, hardworking people of Venezuela who are like, you know what I need to do? Get on a boat, sail across, break across the border, and then scan Gibbs out of the American government. But weirdly, it's people fleeing from things.
And it's, no one is ever questioning, like, if I came into your house and I wanted a cup of tea, but I broke into your house and, like, I want a cup of tea, no one thinks that would, how I entered would somehow indicate my intentions for the country. People just say, oh, they just assume that they come in and break into the country because they're all kind of down in the dumps. I'm like, how you enter usually sets the tone for what your intentions are.
It definitely demonstrates the kind of person that you are.
Except if you have no, I mean, for one thing, that's a values disconnect. You have no regard for the rule of law. So that in and of itself should disqualify you ever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, this is the thing, that every single one of them is a criminal. So why would I have sympathy for them? Unbreakable Litany says, I got called a xenophobe the other day by courtesy of my opinion that the Deliveroo economy was not good. By my logic, it is an admittance to the title of xeno. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, just the fact that the Deliveroo economy can so readily integrate people like this, it's just, it kind of drives me crazy. And I just want to be able to proudly say, I've never used Deliveroo, so I'm not part of the problem.
Yeah,
Callum, have you ever used Deliveroo?
I used it once.
Guilty.
Yeah. Back in the early days. And not even just is it evil, it's shit.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Your food will come cold. The food is usually not great quality. So you're eating like crap anyway.
But even if you order from somewhere you like, right? Like, think about the actual process. Now, back in the good old days when there were delivery boys, they would get a car or a moped and drive to you in their motor vehicle. Now, it's a dude who goes out in the cold on his bike. Takes forever to get to the place, so there's probably the food sitting there getting cold or what before he even gets there. And when he gets there, he shoves it in his bike and then bikes to you, which just is not fast.
The
food is always cold.
I'm also curious how they live, because I think, like, most of the people that I know, are finding it hard to get by. Not people with, like, loads of kids and, like, you know, loads of... Just average kind of single 20s, 30s people, like, married or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, they feel quite tight. And if you're living on like Deliveroo money, clearly you can't pay like normal rent prices. So where are you living? How are you doing life? Like, I don't understand.
You deal drugs.
Yeah.
Well, you have to have some sort of, there has to be some sort of parallel economy.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you. If you're, so, I mean, we had a hotel full of... I'm not saying it wasn't full of drugs, but we had a hotel full of migrants. And the thing is, we were paying for them to live there. And so if you haven't got any rent costs, if you haven't got any electric costs, if you're being, if your food's being paid for by the UK government, then actually maybe the Deliveroo economy, it's, you know, say you earn like, I don't know, 100 quid a night or something. That's 100 quid you didn't have before, right?
Yeah. That you don't have to pay taxes on.
Exactly.
I think one night we did actually sit and run the numbers, me and Josh or something, because of course they get their payment per month, the dental, everything, all of that's paid for. So they've got their small payment, but their food's all paid for anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so you've got that much coming in. And then if you did Deliveroo, and even if you split like 75, 25 with the guy who sets you up illegally, those guys are actually on more than the average person because they're not paying any tax. And
yeah, they're effective. No, you're completely right.
Bills.
Yeah, the people running this country hate it.
Another, this is a really great point by that Texas gal. She says, I don't hear it talked about often, but the reason that so many of these horrible criminals are Venezuelan is because their socialist government emptied out all their prisons and asylums and then put them on buses and shipped them to our border.
Yeah. And now we're getting, the Americans are taking oil from Venezuela. So they've literally sold out. Even though like a few years ago, they were energy independent. Isn't it incredible? They've regressed to empower a regime that's now pumping their borders full of people with malicious intent. Let's put it that way.
Could we do this?
What could we, like, what, empty out a country of its...
Empty out prisons and send them to America.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a plan to send them to Estonia because we don't have enough. Our prisons are literally like capacity. But I think the Estonians don't want our criminals.
I just want to be a pariah state at this point.
Yeah.
If we're going to be a joke or a pariah, I'd rather be the pariah.
Pariah. You know what? Let's go down with dignity.
Yeah.
This is back to my point. We need a dictatorship for 10 years. You see, everything comes around fools. I've thought about this.
I'm just saying it might be considered treasonous if we advocate for dictatorships. So,
but what's the difference between that and the civil service?
Advocating for the prime minister, leave me alone.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I just want an unelected man to be installed in charge of the entire country, like Rishi Sunak.
You said it, not me.
Talking about the pariah state thing, did I tell you about the joke idea me and Josh had?
No, go on.
So we were thinking, if you're going to be a pariah state, we should try and purposely get the stupidest clown world laws possible.
Okay.
So, think when we banned the XL bullies. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the Yemen stuff was kicking off. So we were thinking, what if we deport all XL bullies
to Yemen? Yeah.
Just send them.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
not bad enough that we'd be bombed by the Saudis.
It could be like a new version of long pork.
Unleash waves of
XL bullies over the border.
Actually, they can't have pork in Yemen. I was going to say. No, never mind.
But Sean sends us a super chat and says, don't forget the theft from the Haiti relief funds by Hillary Clinton's foundation in the billions. I'm also concerned about the fact that the Clinton Foundation had someone literally arrested for child trafficking from Haiti.
Yeah.
Laura Silsby. Google it. Bleach Demon says, always great to have Esther back. That's nice. Alistair says, talking of Haiti's dirt cookies, that bastion of prosperity, China, has a region where they literally use stones in food.
Yep. Mm-hmm, I've seen that.
They're so poor, they just add lots of seasoning and little veg, some river pebbles. And they suck the stones to get the flavor off. China also serves grilled ice.
I've literally seen that, yeah. And the stones are like, they're like very smooth pebbles. So they don't take just any stones. They take premium stones.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And then they season it up and then stir fry it. And then like people suck on it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds delicious.
Yeah. Also sounds.
It's a fad.
Nutritionally useless.
I don't know.
It's just a dumb
fad. If you can make money from it, that's the main principle.
I mean, I'm sure it made a lot of money on TikTok. Matt says, even the most racial determinist, hateful neo-Nazi would probably be less condescending towards Haitians than Conan in those videos. Dear God, it's...
Yeah, it was embarrassing. He didn't even try.
Yeah.
Just a picture in the water with a coconut.
Also, like, I mean, I just can't even imagine what the like mindset of a person like that is. Like, right, what are you doing today, Conan? I'm going to one of the poorest countries on earth and I'm going to pretend to my bourgeois millennial left-wing US audience that it's actually great and basically a first world holiday destination. Yeah. It's like, okay, but why are you doing that?
Like, because he's so privileged. That's what extreme privilege looks like.
That's Trump derangement syndrome, though.
Well, there's that as well.
Only reason any of them were doing any of those things or like, how could you say this? Is because they hate Trump.
They just hate Trump so much that like all reason has walked out the door.
Haiti is a wonderful place.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
Haiti is great already. It's like, is it?
I'm pretty sure the child mortality rate is like 13 kids in 100. or something.
Matt exactly hits your point there. This faux outrage about the shithole countries is one of the examples of Trump derangement syndrome.
Oh yeah,
you're just being fake.
Yeah, but
trust Trump to put it as inelegantly as possible by saying it's a shithole country, which he really should have said. Maybe we should be questioning these people's values, their economic. Well, yeah, but I think he would have said that in public as well. I think he's brazen enough to say that in public and just laugh it off. The thing is, even if you made the reasonable case, I don't even think people will listen. It's like, it's still racist.
Yeah.
Imagine if he was asked today, like he's doing some campaign speech and someone says, do you still think Haiti's a shithole?
Well, would you go there?
It's not like
China, which I love. I love China. I didn't love Haiti, though. Would you go there? It's worse.
Well, they're eating each other now, so I think it's shitter. It's probably his
You know, it's gotten worse since I said that. Yeah. Worse.
General High Payments know when your Haiti travel video is going to come out.
Fuck that.
Yeah, that's
like, I'm willing to go to war zone.
Absolutely not. No.
I don't want to get barbecued for being white.
Sincerely, I have a policy for my travels, which I like.
It's exotic meat.
I have a policy for my travels, which is I like going places with order. So the Taliban, for example.
And infrastructure.
Well, the Taliban actually really do have kept order in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah. Like every they have tourists.
Every 200 meters, there's guys with guns. If anyone starts something, they're getting their arms chopped off.
You go there with your arms showing as a woman. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sorted. Exactly.
But also in Russia, like if you go to the war zone, very orderly place.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like the military are everywhere. But Haiti.
Yeah, no. Mr. Barbecue isn't recruiting enough.
Sean sends another super chat. Thanks, man. Saying, yes, let's send all our female leaders on bike tours of Islamic countries. They can absorb all that peace. That's been tried, and it turns out that a lot of them don't return, so we won't advocate for that.
Oh.
But Caroline says, this is wrong, Carl. The other half just started working as a welding tutor, and according to the government safeguarding literature, you really have to watch the kids for right-wing extremism. One of the signs given was interested in joining the army. Amazing.
Yeah. How dare they?
Again, there's just this one stat that always comes up, which is more Muslims joined ISIS than the British Army.
Army, yeah. It's very depressing.
That's not just the army. It also includes the Air Force and the Navy.
Yeah, the British Armed Forces. Sorry.
That's even worse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, and it makes you wonder. Furious Dan says, when Carl says the victims of terrorism have been employed to make propaganda, I imagine a team of British Soviet necromancers behind the scenes. Yes, basically. I mean, it's genuinely disgusting that I'm going to guess that the government is paying the survivors of terrorism to browbeat and bribe.
It wouldn't be the first time they've done it. I mean, they gave massive subsidies to media outlets during COVID to terrify the British public. Yeah. And there are loads of independent media outlets that are still suing the government saying, hey, we didn't get anything. Where's that?
Yeah. Ryan says, don't worry. The government has the true solution. Protect Muslim communities with taxpayer money. This is their priority.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so quite annoying. North FC Zuma says, how do they even know the vast majority deplore this kind of violence? Well, they have polled them, and it wasn't something like 20% or 30% that thought that ISIS was justified in some way. And so two-thirds were like, well, I'm not sure I agree with ISIS. Good news.
Great news.
Kevin says, the far right in my mind is basically the magician's assistant. You know, the scantily clad dolly bird. Who is brought out to distract you from whatever the magician is doing.
Actually doing.
We're putting it, to be honest.
I mean,
it doesn't exist. Well, they're just, there is no English Liberation Army. It's...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, no,
they're a bunch of guys with like sticks, yeah.
I'm not going to say anything. Matt says, frankly, I don't think the victims of Muslim terrorism actually have a moral right to lecture the broader public on their safety by virtue of their victimhood. I'm sorry for what happened to you, but I'm not obligated to compromise my safety and that of my friends and family to spare your sensibilities, regardless of your past. I'm not sure if it is their sensibilities.
You would think there would be more outrage by the potential of other people going through what they went through.
Yeah, that would be a normal thing. Like people call it the don't look back in anger narrative.
Yeah, and it's just like, no, you should be pretty angry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. If I'm missing a leg because of some guy at a concert.
We went through it. The Middle East Eye, weirdly enough, had the story and all the evidence. That was orchestrated by the government. The Don't Look Back in Anger, the hashtags you see at these events, the random group of imams who turned up at London Bridge with all the same A4 bits.
It's kind of like the same like kind of Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa right after apartheid. They're trying to like galvanize the best in society. I'm like, okay, you can have that, but there has to be some sort of like, you have to concede something. You can't just have like reconciliation based on what?
But it's worse than that because this is an active element of the British state. And I can only think of one example that got bigged up in the UK as an act of far-right terrorism, anti-Muslim terrorism, which is Darren Osborne driving into that mosque.
Yeah.
No such campaign was tried.
Was this in Finsbury Park?
Finsbury Park Mosque.
Yeah, I think so.
So, I mean, could you even think of the discussion at the Home Office? Well, we need to make sure people don't blame the English for what Darren Osborne did.
Well, so, yeah, exactly.
All blah, blah, blah.
Didn't
happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, that's a really good point. I never saw that.
People in charge of the government actively orchestrate that if you're blown up by a Muslim terrorist, you should shut up. And if it's anything else, it's allowed to be discussed and a story. Okay.
I mean, it's obviously drawn from total fear. Like, I imagine there are conversations in the Home Office that go something like, okay, if when we're bending over backwards to do everything that we can for this community, they're responsible for two-thirds of all the terror attacks. Imagine what it'd be like if we would criticize them.
Well, the thing is, if you want to make the argument that the community isn't responsible for those terror attacks, the average Muslim person isn't responsible for a guy blowing up a concert, obviously that's true, fine. Then you need to come up with, how are we going to isolate and remove these people from these communities? And also, how are we going to stop it so that these particular communities don't keep breeding these kinds of people with these hateful ideas? You're not giving any solutions. You're just giving empty platitudes.
That's
what the average person is going to see someone in hijab and be like, oh yeah, this person is connected with the person who blew up kids at an Ariana Grande concert. Obviously not. But if you're not giving solutions, stop talking, because you're just annoying everyone else.
Yeah. And also, it just looks disgusting. It's like, yeah, okay, you may have like crippled me for life, but you know, we don't need to be bigots.
Exactly. No hate.
Actually, I think that might be one of those times where it's hard to criticize someone for holding retrograde opinions.
We are out of time, so I suppose we'll end it there. Where would people find you?
Twitter, my website, and Instagram. Yeah, that's me. I hate social media, but I have to do it.
You want to say it just for people who are listening as well. We get a lot of audio listeners.
Oh, yeah. sorry, Esther Critical, Esther K _K on Twitter, and my same Esther K on Instagram, I think. Yeah, that's it.
There we are. Yeah. Otherwise, bye.
Bye.